During my lifetime, I have moved a number of times. As you've heard me say many times, I grew up in Pensacola, Florida, and went to college in Tennessee and seminary in Texas. And that's just the beginning. I've moved any number of times, including after even moving to California in 1979. And I have a couple of observations from that. Number one, I hate moving. I have a religious conviction against moving. I think I would move at all costs. You just don't move, in my view. The other observation I would make about moving is that I have learned a few things. And lo and behold, as I've worked my way through the book of Numbers, I've discovered that what I learned about moving is in the book of Numbers. Now, I didn't know that through all these moves I've made. I only discovered it recently as I started studying the book of Numbers. Now, you say, I don't plan to move. Does this pertain to me? I'm settled where I'm at. Does this only apply to moving? And the answer is no. As a matter of fact, the principles pertaining to moving in Numbers chapter 4 apply to just about everything we do. So what I'd like to do is sort of survey the book of Numbers chapter 4 and draw from it some principles of moving which apply to other areas of our life. Now, turn with me to Numbers chapter 4, and I'm going to begin reading with verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, take a census of the sons of Kohath from among the children of Levi by their family, by their father's house, and from 30 years old and above, even to 50 years old, all who entered the service to do the work of the tabernacle of meeting. This is the service of the sons of Kohath in the tabernacle of meeting, relating to the most holy things. When the camp prepares to journey, Aaron and his sons shall come, and they shall take down the covering of veil and cover of the ark of the testimony with it. Then they shall put it in a covering of badger skins and spread over that a cloth entirely of blue, and they shall insert its poles. On the table of showbread they shall spread a blue cloth and put on it the dishes, the pans, the bowls, the pitchers for pouring, and the showbread shall be on it. They shall spread over them a scarlet cloth and cover the same with a covering of badger skins, and they shall insert its poles. They shall take a blue cloth and cover the lampstand of the light and its lamps, its wicker trimmers, its trays, and all the oil vessels with which they service it. Then they shall put in it all the utensils in a covering of badger skin and put it on a carrying beam. Over the golden altar they shall spread a blue cloth and cover it with a covering of badger skins, and they shall insert its poles. Then they shall take all the utensils of service which they minister in the sanctuary, put them in blue cloth, cover them with the covering of badger skins, and put them on carrying beams. Also, they shall take away the ashes from the altar and spread a purple cloth over it. They shall put on it all the implements with which they minister there, the fire pans, the forks, the shovels, the basins, and all the utensils of the altar, and they shall spread on it a covering of badger skin and insert its poles. And when Aaron and his sons have finished covering the sanctuary and all the furnishings of the sanctuary, when the camp is to set to go, then the sons of Kohath shall come to carry them, but they shall not touch any holy thing, lest they die. They are the things of the tabernacle of meeting, which the sons of Kohath are to carry. The appointed duty of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, is the oil of the light, the sweet incense, the daily grain offering, the anointing oil, the oversight of all the tabernacle, of all that is in it, and the sanctuary and its furnishings. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Do not cut off the tribes of the family of the Kohathites, for from among the Levites, but do this in regard to them, that they may live and not die." Then they approach the holy thing, and Aaron his son shall go in and appoint each of them to his service and his task. But they shall go in to watch while the holy things are being covered. They should not go in, lest they shall die. Now, there's more to the passage, but let me stop here and explain what's going on. The children of Israel are at Sinai. They've built the tabernacle, but the object is to move from Sinai to the promised land. Now, if you'll recall, how many people have we got?
2 million.
So, what we got to do is move the tabernacle and 2 million people from Sinai to the promised land. Now, what is it going to take to do that? And that's what this chapter is about. It is focused on moving the tabernacle. So the chapter is divided into basically three parts. There's a fourth part, but it's basically three parts. Now, if you've been with me as we've gone through Numbers so far, you remember that the tribe of Levi was divided into three families. Remember? Remember who they are? We'll get to them in a minute. That's the outline of this chapter. What I just read to you was the portion that deals with Kohath. Then we'll get later to Gershon, and then the third family in a minute. But what's going on is we've got to get this tabernacle to the Holy Land, to the Promised Land. And in order to do that, we're gonna have some kind of management. We've got to manage this project. So what I just read to you is each family, and I just read to you one family, we'll get to the other two in a second. Each family is going to be given an assignment. This is what you're supposed to do. Now, there are a lot of details here, but there's some fascinating principles if you back off and just look at what's going on in the historical context of what's happening. So, let me just briefly explain the verses I've read so far. In the first three verses, he says, "I want you to take a census of this family." And the census is to be from all the people that are from 30 years to 50 years. Sound familiar? Where have we heard something like that before? In chapter 1, we took a census of all the men who were 20 years old and older of all the tribes, but not of the tribe of Levi. And those were called, in chapter 1, the men of war. So if you were 20 years old, you could serve in the military. Now, he says, I want you to survey just the tribe of Levi, and instead of starting with age 20, he starts with age 30. In order to serve in the tabernacle, you had to be 30 years old. That's an interesting little observation. You could go to war at 20, but you had to be 30 to handle the tabernacle. You could make all kinds of interesting little observations about that. But the minimum age for priestly service was 30. And according to some other passages of Scripture later on in the Old Testament, this became the custom. You had to be 30 before you could enter the priestly ministry. One commentator said, the word for service in this passage comes from the same Hebrew word used of military service in chapter 1, verse 3, suggesting that the work of the Levites for the Lord was as carefully organized as a militia. End of quote. So that's basically what's going on here. To manage getting this tabernacle to the Promised Land, we've got to get organized. So the first thing he does is say, survey this tribe and let's see how many people we got, 30 years to 50 years. Now, look at verse 4. This is the service. This particular family, he says, is going to handle the most holy things when the camp prepares to journey. Key phrase. That's what's going on in this chapter. As a matter of fact, it's what's going on since we started the book. We're preparing to move. We're going to move to the Promised Land. And in order to do that, we've got to get organized. That's what's going on in this chapter. And this family is going to be in charge of the most holy thing, which he says is the veil and the cover of which is to cover the ark. Now, in the rest of the verses I read, we could go through this and see that in verse 7, he talks about the table of showbread. They were to pack the table of showbread, this family. In verse 9, he talks about the lampstand. In verse 10, he says, and they shall put all the utensils in a covering of badger skin. In verse 11, he talks about the golden altar. In verse 12, he talks about the utilities of service. And they are to be. These are the utensils of service for the golden altar. Even down to the ashes in verse 13, and then all the implements, and he lays them out, the fire plan, the forks, the shovels, the basins, and all the utensils of the altar, they should be covered with badger skin. Then he says in verse 15, this is the service of the other sons of Kohath. Notice he says, verse 15, when the camp is set to go, again, the point of this chapter is we're about to move, and you, this family, Kohath, you're responsible for all those holy pieces of furniture in the tabernacle. That is your responsibility. Now, there's one other thing that's interesting here. And that is, if you drop down to verse 17 through 20, he says, and the sons of Aaron shall go in and appoint each of them to his service and task. What would you call that today? What's the modern word for what that phrase is saying? This is your job. So what would we call that? Could we call that a job description? Would that be a legitimate? Yeah, it's a job description. Interesting. All right. Now, the first 20 verses are talking about that one family, Kohath. And their job is the most holy stuff. You carry, you pack and carry the most holy stuff. Got it? All right, the second family is Gershon. And that starts in verse 21. And again, it starts with a survey. So verse 21 says, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Take a census of the sons of Gershon, by the father's house and by their families, 30 years old and above, even to 50 years old. You shall number them, all who enter to perform the service, to do the work of the tabernacle.'" Now, look at verse 24. This is the service. So verses 21 and 23 are saying, "Survey them." Verses 24 to 26 are saying, "And this is the service." And then he spells it out. "They shall carry the curtains of the tabernacle and the tabernacle of meeting with its covering, the covering of badger skin." That is the screen for the doors of the tabernacle of meeting, the screen for the door of the gate of the court, the hanging of the court, which are around the tabernacle and altar, and their cords, all the furnishings for their service, and all that is made for these things, so shall they serve. So he does the same thing we just saw. He tells, survey this family, tell them this is what they're responsible for, and there's more. He says in verse 27, "And you shall assign these to the sons of the Gershomites, all the task and the service, and you shall appoint them all their tasks to this day. This is the service of the family of the sons of Gershon in the tabernacle of meeting." And I want you to look at verse 28. "And their duty shall be under the authority of Ithamar." He is going to supervise this family. Interesting. Now, keep in mind, the issue is managing how to get the tabernacle from Mount Sinai to the Promised Land. And we can see in here elements of what we would call organization today. Job descriptions, appointment of supervisors. Interesting. Now, there's one other family, Merarah, and in verse 29 and 30, they do a survey of that family, 30 years old and above. In verses 31 and 32, it says, "They shall carry all their service for the tabernacle of meeting, the boards of the tabernacle, its bars, its pillars, its sockets, and the pillars around the court, and their sockets and pegs and cords with all their furnishings and all their service, and you shall sign to each man by name the items he must carry." All right, notice, this is another, the third family, but what I want you to see in verse 32 is, "You shall assign to each man by name the items he must carry." What's that? Job description, right? Okay. Verse 33, "And this is the service that they shall render." Only I want you to drop down to the latter part of the verse. It says, "Under the authority of Ithamar, the son of Aaron, the priest." So we've got a job description in verse 32 and a supervisor in verse 33. Now, that's basically what's going on in this chapter, but it's obviously not the end of the chapter. The rest of it is nothing more than the total. Now, to read all of this is a bit repetitious. So rather than read all of this, I'm going to summarize what's going on. The rest of the chapter is going to give us the total of all of the people involved in moving the tabernacle. So, in verses 34 to 37, it's the sons of Kohath, and their total is 2,750. In verses 38 to 41, we have the sons of Gershon, and their total is 2,630. In verses 42 to 45, we have the sons of Merari, and their total is 3,200. Now, in verses 46 to 48, it gives the total of all three families, which is 8,500. That's what's in this passage. Verse 49 says, according to the commandment of the Lord, they were numbered by the hand of Moses, each according to his service and according to his task. Thus they were numbered by him as the Lord commanded Moses. So, Moses once again carried out all of the instructions that the Lord gave him. All right. I've gone through this passage rather rapidly. Frankly, what I've told you is basically what's here. So the three Levite families were counted and assigned duties for moving the tabernacle. That one sentence sums up this whole chapter, including the fact that they numbered, which means they counted. So, what are we to learn from this? Well, I think it's inescapable that the point of this passage is they got organized to move the tabernacle. Now, as I recall, as we've been going through Numbers, one of the points I made that I think Numbers is telling us is God is a God of order. Remember me saying that? And now I'm going to say God is a God of organization. So what I want to do is talk about organization or management. I think to appreciate what's going on in this chapter, and I've alluded to it, but I want to back up and spell it all out. To really appreciate what's going on in this chapter, you need to back up and go all the way back to Abraham. God promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob the land that we call Palestine. That's in the book of Genesis. But their descendants, instead of ending up in Palestine, ended up in Egypt as slaves. And then God sent along Moses to deliver them from Egypt. He led them out of Egypt and led them down to the base of Mount Sinai. Now, that's where we find them in the book of Numbers. Now, the object, as I've said several times, is to get this crew from the base of the Mount Sinai up to the promised land. That is what's going on. So what does it take to get 2 million people and the tabernacle from Sinai to the promised land? And the answer is get organized. So that's the opening chapters of Numbers is nothing more than preparation for that trip. The trip is what the rest of the book of Numbers is about, and starting in a few chapters. But these opening chapters, and we're not done, is just preparation for the trip. So in chapter 1, they took a census of all the men who were able to wage war. In chapter 2, the 12 tribes were organized around the tabernacle. That's where I said God is a God of order. And the big point I made is, and God was right in the middle of the camp and suggested he wanted to be right in the middle of everything. In chapter 3, He assigned spiritual duties to the tribe of Levi. And now in chapter 4, he assigns traveling duties to the Levites. So, this chapter really focuses in on some of the concepts of being organized. If I were going to extract from this chapter principles of organization, and for that matter, in view of the first four chapters, I would say something like this. The first thing they had was a plan. The various tribes were camped around the tabernacle. They had a plan for where the people would be. And in traveling, they had a plan that the various parts were going to be carried by three different families within the tribe of Levi. So they had a plan. What this chapter does is not only lay out the plan, but it puts people in the plan. You are going to carry this, and you are going to carry that. So whatever you call it, there is this plan, and then there's putting the people in the plan. And the third element of organization, as indicated in this chapter, is they had supervisors. Now, I want to repeat this because I think that's what's in this chapter. And as I'm going to explain in a minute, I think this is the basic idea of all organization. That there is a plan, there's putting people in the plan, and there is the supervision of the people who are in the plan to get the plan done. Make sense? Now, there are other little things going on, lots of other little things going on. One in this chapter is, it tells them what not to do. Remember, it said, and if you touch this, you are going to die. Now, let me chase a rabbit. I heard the other day somebody said, let me chase a squirrel. All right, let me chase a squirrel for a minute. I'm going to come back and talk about this whole concept of organization and administration, but let me pursue this for just a second. Years ago, I attended a workshop at a conference, and the fellow was lecturing on organization. And it had to do with the organization of a Christian school, and he was the principal. And the board of the school decided that they needed a soda machine on the campus. So at a board meeting, they said to the principal, get a pop machine put on the campus. So he did. And the parents were livid. And they went to the board trying to have the guy's job over it. And he was dumbfounded. Oh, what did I do? And they said, you put all these sugary drinks in that pop machine. And he said, ah, I learned a great lesson. When you lay out a plan, lay out what you're supposed to do and include in the plan what you're not supposed to do. Simple. And then he said this. That's all in the Bible. God had a plan. God said to Adam, you can eat any tree you want. Then don't eat that one. He said, did you ever look at the Ten Commandments? Some are positive. Most are don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. In the New Testament, in 1 Timothy chapter 5, there is instructions on supporting widows. A very fascinating passage of Scripture. According to that passage, there was no social security system at the time. The family took care of the elderly. But if there was no family to take care of, matter of fact, Paul says, if there's a family, let them take care of them. If there is no family, then the church is to take care of them. Is that a revolutionary idea or what? And then it says this, but there are qualifications. Don't support any widow who's under 60 years of age because she's just going to get married again. Wow. The point I want to make is the Bible is full of laying out plans, and the plan includes what you don't do as well as what you do do. And some plans are faulty in human organizations because they tell you what to do, but they don't tell you what not to do. Now, I want to back up. Those are just the observations I gleaned from this chapter, but I want to pursue this. I think this applies to a lot of things that we do. Not just move the tabernacle from Sinai to the Promised Land. So let me tell you a story. Years ago, I pastored a rather large church. There were 10 people on the pastoral staff. I found a fella that, in my opinion, had the gift of administration. I had known him for several years, and he was just great at running a church that I knew about. So he was the assistant pastor. So for a number of years, this thing ran like clockwork because he ran the church. Now, we had a weekly staff meeting. Priceless. I was chairing the staff meeting. Any concern anybody on the staff had, we dealt with in that meeting. Then we simply delegated, okay, you do this, you do this, you do this, and then he supervised it, and I, by job description, my job was to study and teach and be the chief administrator, but he did all the supervision. Got it? Then after many years, he left. And I decided, after watching him for those years, I'd like to maybe do this myself. So what I did is I started reading books on management. How do you manage an organization? And I read a pile of them. There was a man in the church who had a sort of summer house, a little vacation house. Nobody was in it. They didn't rent it. And he let me use it. It was down at Laguna Beach. And so I would, on occasion, just take a week, take a pile of books, go down to that house. It was me, the Lord, and the text. And I would study in great detail for 12 to 15 hours a day the book I was going to teach next in the church. So on that year, I took all these books I'd been reading, and I went to that little house down at Laguna Beach, and I studied management. Matter of fact, I ended up writing a paper on management. And this is what I concluded. This is what I discovered. Nobody agrees on the names of what's going on. I don't know how many books I read, number. Most of them secular, one or two by Christians. And they were all experts in management, and they called it different things. So one of the problems was to think through what one called an objective, another called a goal, and it just got all confusing. So one of the things I tried to do was back off and say, okay, I don't care what you call it. What are the basic concepts of management? And I came up with three things. Would you like to know what those three things are? Well, I tell you what, just for you, I ran it off. So I'm going to pass out and explain management. Now, that sheet says management consists of three things. I don't think I have enough sheets to go around, so some of you need to share. All right, so far so good. All right, I think we made it. The three parts of planning are, management I should say, are planning, organization, and administration. Now, you can put all kinds of things under each of those. What does a plan consist of? And the answer is a purpose, goals, objectives, programs, schedule, and a budget. Now, let me apply that to the church. What's the purpose of the church? By the way, that's a tricky little question. The purpose of the church is to glorify God. All right? Now, a goal is what you have to reach in order to accomplish the purpose. So what's the goal of the church? Well, I would say it's to make disciples. I would also say that the Great Commission was given in Matthew 28, and that if you look at the book of Acts, the way they did it is explained in the book of Acts, which amounts to establishing churches. Matter of fact, if you look at Acts chapter 2, Peter did exactly what Jesus told him to do in the Great Commission in Matthew 28 and added a detail. So in Matthew chapter 28, we're given the Great Commission. In Acts chapter 2, they fulfilled it to the letter and added this. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, which means the apostles' teaching. They taught fellowship, the breaking of bread, and prayers. Those were the goals. In order to glorify God and make disciples, what we need to do is teach, provide for some kind of fellowship, breaking of bread, which, you know, some want to say it's the meal and some want to say it's the Lord's Supper. In the New Testament, they were both. They had a meal in which they observed the Lord's Supper. And they prayed. So those, I say, are the goals. Now, I think beyond the book of Acts and these two chapters, Matthew 28 and Acts 2, you could add things like training leaders. That comes along in 2 Timothy. The things that you've heard of me among many witnesses, commit thou to others who are able to teach others also. That's training leaders. Ephesians chapter 4 talks about training. So maybe you could put that as a goal. Then the objectives are short-range goals. And again, the nomenclature differs depending on who you're reading. And I did all this 25 years ago. There's new, more up-to-date sophistication, strategic, and all this kind of stuff. I'm after ideas, not nomenclature. All right, the idea is you have to have a plan. I don't care what you call it. So there are long-term goals and short-term goals. So we're breaking this down. We're starting with the big picture, and we're getting down to smaller and smaller and smaller bites. So most books on objectives would say short-term goals, objectives, is they must be specific, obtainable, measurable, written, and they must be measurable and obtainable. So if we're going to glorify God by making disciples, and making disciples is to teach, what's the next step? You got to have a teacher. So this little congregation needs to call a pastor. Then you got to have a program. And the program are the activities. The activities would be things like, well, in terms of a church, how about a Sunday morning service? Is that a creative idea? Yeah, let's do that. That's going to be the program. And now, if there are other things that I didn't mention, like they sang, so we're going to have somebody direct the music. And if we're going to have somebody direct the music, we're going to have somebody play a musical instrument. So this whole program is going to include activities and people. Okay? And then we've got to have a schedule. In other words, we got to have a time and a place. So I got this great idea. We're going to start a church on Lindley Avenue. So let's call it the Lindley Church. And I sarcastically say, the avenue was named after the church. It's actually the other way around, but that's what I tell people. Why'd you get the name Lindley Church? I said, well, we came up with the name and then they named a street after us. Actually, it's the other way around. We got named after the street. At any rate, let's meet at 5901 Lindley Avenue on Sunday morning at 10:30. How's that for a plan? You get what I'm saying? And then, now the nasty M word, money. Are you going to turn on the lights? Are you going to have air conditioning? Are you going to pay the preacher? Then we got to have a budget. Now that's a plan. How would you like a planning sheet? I laid out all these things on one little sheet of paper I call the planning sheet. Here's another one. Pastor Mercado, here's another one. All right, I got a spare of this one. All I've done is lay out purpose, goals, objectives, program, schedule, budget, and on this sheet I put evaluation. Now, I say you need to do this no matter what you do. Let's suppose you were going to take a trip as a family to Disneyland. You know what you need? A planning sheet. This applies to a family outing and a Fortune 500 company. So what would be the purpose of going to Disneyland? I would say it's to bind the family together. Now, what's the objective? What's the goal? To have fun. Why are you going to have fun? We're going to have fun together. You could go have fun with somebody else, but we're going to do it together because we want to bind the family together. So what is the objective? Well, we need something everybody, if the goal is to have fun, we need to choose an activity that everybody will have fun doing. I gave it away. I said we were going to Disney. But if you were trying to think from this from the top, then okay, we got to have some activity where everybody's going to have fun. Then the program is Disney. Now we got to have a schedule. When are we going to do this? Next Saturday. And then we got to have a budget. What does it cost to go to Disney? There's that M word, money. What are the tickets? 100? 100 and what? 140? Per person? Per day. 140 per day. And people squawk because we pass an offering plate in church. Never mind. Oh, plus parking. What's four times? Good night. And that doesn't count parking or food.
$5 a bottle of water.
$5 what?
For a bottle of water.
Shows you I hadn't been to Disneyland lately. All right. Now, you got the sheet? That's the plan. Now, the organization. And what you need to organize are the people to fit the plan. So what you need is a job description, a job recruitment, personnel selection, and job training. Now that's basically what goes under organization. So then when you get a plan and you put people in the plan, what do you have to do next? Supervise it. I'm calling that administration. So in a nonprofit like a church, you would have to have a board. Different denominations call it by different names. Then you have to have probably the administrator and supervisors under that. Then there's delegation, where you take the people, give them the job description, delegate that job to them, and then you supervise them. Now, there are all kinds of other subjects that can be put under these three categories, especially the second and the third. In the paper I wrote, I had other topics under those categories. One was, what is the concept of leadership? Whole books have been written on some of these, what are the principles of delegation? And on and on and on and on you could go. I am submitting to you that this is the basic concept of management, and it's all in numbers. Is that interesting? God is a God of order, and God is a God of organization. He organizes according to these principles. A plan, putting people in the plan, and supervising the people so that they do their job, that the plan gets accomplished. Now, I just spelled out two illustrations of the church and going to Disneyland. I think we need this for Sunday school, children's church, the music ministry, lunch, everything we do, men's breakfast, whatever. Does the app class need this? Or if you're just going to do something simple like go to Disney, then everybody in the family needs to be given a job description, and you need to supervise them along the way. How are we doing? That interesting stuff? One more observation, and I'm done. There are all kinds of things I can talk about. Some administrators micromanage. Some are delegators. They give the person a job and let them run with it. I am more a Ronald Reagan delegator. I don't like to micromanage. I think you ought to give somebody a job and give them the freedom to go do it. In my system, my application of this, I've learned a great, huge lesson. So I'm going to conclude by telling you the one great, great lesson I've learned. The key to all of this is that little phrase, personnel selection. To give it to you as simply as I can, if you put the right person in the job, you sleep at night. If you put the wrong person in the job, you pray all night. So it is critically important that you put the right person in the right place. And I have to tell you, I've made huge mistakes in doing that. I've gone through this process and sat down with the board and said, okay, we got to put somebody in charge of a particular job in the church. And we've prayed about it. And we've discussed it for as long as, in some cases, months. And we finally agreed unanimously. We had found the right person in the church to put that person in the right job. And that individual hadn't been in that job more than about 3 weeks, then we looked at each other and said, we made a big mistake. So that's the key to this. It's putting the right person in the right job. As a matter of fact, as I read this book we call the Bible, it seems to me there are no committees in here. You know what God does when he wants to do something? He chooses one person. Think through the Bible. It's all about people, individuals. Want to build an ark? I got just the guy, Noah. Want to get these slaves out of Egypt? Got just the guy, Moses. Want to conquer the promised land? Got just the guy, Joshua. But Joshua. This book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth, but you shall meditate therein day and night, that you may observe to do the job description. And that is management and organization. Father, thank you for giving us this word, giving us these concepts. Give us wisdom as we try to apply them. In Jesus' name, amen.